Welcome to Women Who Fights podcast. We empower female fighters to take full agency over their training. Our goal is to celebrate and inspire others with the incredible action women and allies are taking to level the playing field. Join us as we talk to experts, uncover prejudice, and champion what's driving our progress. Emily Pappas is the founder of Relentless Athletics, which is an organisation that works with athletes to improve their performance through science. Every member of the head coaching staff has a master's degree in a scientific field relating to sports science and physiology. They are based in Pennsylvania in the USA and work with young girls in school all the way to nationally ranked athletes. Emily's focus on female athletics performance caught our attention, so we were dying to speak with her about what she does and why she does it, as well as learning from her expertise. We talk about recovery, weightlifting, injury prevention, and why women typically begin strength training so much later than their male counterparts. We hope you enjoy this as much as we did. Emily, you are amazing. You do some really, really interesting stuff with your focus on weightlifting for Relentless Athletics.
Yes.
And you've been doing it for quite a long time. You've got so many qualifications that I wouldn't know where to begin. But do you want to just tell us a little bit about your background and like how you ended up where you are and why you're doing what you're doing?
Of course. So as you said, my name is Emily. I am the owner of Relentless Athletics, and we are a sport performance facility that specializes in female athlete development. I opened Relentless about 5 years ago with really the intention to help not only provide the service of strength training to female athletes, but more importantly, to be a type of educational resource for not just athletes, but parents and coaches, to really have them understand the science behind female athlete development and why strength training is such an essential component here, especially because it is something that far too many females get exposed to way too late in their athletic career. Here in the States, most female athletes really don't get exposed to any type of true training until they're in college. And when we think about it, most of our athletes, that means that they only have really 4 more years of their sport. That's the end of it. And that really just does not make any sense when you think of with most other male sports, you know, they're getting exposed to this type of training far earlier in their athletic career. And that's something that I really was able to, you know, experience back when I was growing up. I was not a great athlete. If I made the team, I was sitting on the bench, but that was okay because that was great because I had more time to really study science. And I played pickup soccer all the time and I was a runner, but I kept getting injured. And I really couldn't figure out why. So in my undergrad, I studied biology, specifically biochemistry, and I really fell in love with the physiology of being a human. And I thought it was so fascinating that with a very specific type of stressor that is overloaded, your body adapts. And I just felt, wow, that is why humans have evolved to what we are today. And this is absolutely amazing. I want to study this even more. So when I went to grad school, I was a PhD fellow. And during that time, I was really interested in specifically weightlifting and how that carries over to athletic development. So specifically weightlifting in regards to snatch and clean and jerk, because in my mind, you know, that is a type of skill. And when we expose athletes to any type of complex skill, that enhances their motor skills, right? Their body awareness, their ability to understand how to move in space. And I felt, well, this is like the golden ticket, right? I'm providing them an overload. They're getting stronger. They're getting powerful. But even more so, they're really developing this skill that's going to carry over to their ability to acquire their sport skills. So while studying that, I was like, wow, why are all these studies on male athletes? Where are the female athletes? I'm confused. And that's when it really opened my eyes that, oh my goodness, there's far too few studies that are actually on female athletes. And for me, I'm a scientist, so I want to think about it. I'm thinking, okay, is that because no one's interested in studying female athletes? Is that because there's not a lot of female athletes that are willing to be subjects. And at the same time, I thought, well, why would a female athlete be a subject if they don't really understand what this is? And if you do find the subjects of female athletes that are being studied, they're normally novice lifters. So I'm like, okay, wait a second. This makes no sense to me. We need more studies on female athletes. And that's why at first I was like, you know, I'm going to get my PhD. But when I actually understood, you know, the process of academia and when I would actually be able to apply the things that I'm studying, I found that, you know what, I'd rather open up my own company. I have an entrepreneurial spirit. I'd rather not wait 20 years to be able to do what I want to do. I want to be able to kind of start providing, this is how I'm going to make the most difference. And that's what's most important to me in my life, is to be able to touch female athletes, change their lives for the better, and help educate more coaches, parents, athletes all over the world to understand, you know, what it means to be an athlete and how females are a little bit different, but how we can really take advantage of that difference and allow them to excel. Because, oh my goodness, if we do, I can't wait to see what females are capable of doing in the athletic realm, you know, 20 mm-hmm. years from now. Because if we actually give them the tools that they need, they are going to do some amazing things that we have yet to see. And I kind of want to be part of that.
So what is Relentless Athletics exactly doing for people who don't know?
Yes. So I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, so we are a semi-private training facility. So all of the training we do, the majority of our athletes are youth. So we have athletes that range from 9 years old through high school. We have several national level athletes. We have an Olympian. And what we do is we provide small group training, but each athlete receives their own program. So it's very individualized, because we like to say, honestly, regardless of gender, your training has to match your individual needs. That's what sports science is all about. So we do that within a very unique all-female environment provided by all-female strength coaches, which is another big passion of mine, getting more females involved in the coaching realm. Because, you know, when I was growing up, it was very difficult as a female to kind of get those opportunities. With also owning being a female. And I wanted to, that's why we have a big internship program here. I want to provide more females this opportunity, because growing up for me, I didn't have a lot of female role models. And I feel that it's really important for young females to grow up with very strong female role models that can show them you can be strong, you can be passionate, you can be anything that you want. And I find that, you know, give them these type of people to look up to within an environment that they feel comfortable to be silly, be themselves, don't worry about if a boy's there judging them, because we all know what it's like to be an adolescent. And that's really the premise there. And then on top of that, we do injury rehab, we do nutrition coaching, because of course, these are all multiple components that allow for the development of an athlete. But at the end of the day, I wanted to create a very unique environment for females that is going to nurture their growth in not just being an athlete, but also people, because that's kind of most important in life.
Yeah. That's amazing. And the fact that you're incorporating like young girls and their parents mm-hmm. is so important. There's this idea, all right, mm-hmm. In where I come from, that when you're, you know, my mom used to say, when you're very young, you shouldn't do weights. You shouldn't lift any weights. It's very bad for you. Could you talk about that, please?
Yes, that is a great question. And that is a question that we still receive from many parents. That is a huge myth. That's the cool part about science, right? Is that we are constantly evolving and discovering new things. And no, that is completely untrue. In fact, it's actually really beneficial, because at the end of the day, prior to puberty, male and female athletes are going to actually respond to training very similarly. No, it is not going to stunt your growth, but instead what it's really going to do is allow a type of neuromuscular development. And that, put simply, you're teaching young kids how to be more aware of their body and to get more muscles to work in coordination with one another. And that's really important when you're growing, because think about it, your bones are growing, your muscles may not be catching up, your tendons may not be at the same rate as the rest of your body. That's why you have that awkward stage. And that's why strength training is so, so, so important at a young adolescent age, because it's actually going to enhance your ability to grow and do so with better body awareness. Post-puberty, males have a big, you know, big amount of testosterone that is going to occur. And from there, they have what's called a neuromuscular spurt, and that male athletes, they grow. And because with this higher amount of testosterone, their muscles are going to grow with them, meaning that they kind of know how to move their body. Females don't get that same. We don't have the same hormonal makeup. So upon puberty for us, we're kind of lagging. And that's where you see that awkward female stage where they're just like, what is she doing with her knees? And that's normal. That's physiological. And that's why strength training for an adolescent female is one of the most important things, because that creates that neuromuscular spurt that males get naturally and females don't. So I always like to say, if you're a female athlete that is wants to participate in sport and you're an adolescent, it is your parents' and coaches' responsibility to expose you to strength training, because this is the only modality that we know is going to, one, reduce the chance of injuries in a very dose-dependent manner, and two, is going to enhance your performance. And this is because it's creating a physiological effect that not only are your muscles and tendons going to increase their capacity, but you're developing this coordination that you normally don't get naturally, and that's okay. But post that, males and females are going to respond to strength training exactly the same. That's the really another huge myth, you know, in that males will always start with a little bit more muscle. But guess what? It's the same. We're going to still respond. We're still going to get the same benefits, if not more, because we have estrogen, and estrogen has been shown to actually enhance our ability to grow muscle in a very in a dependent fashion to the amount of estrogen that we have, because it helps activate satellite cells. And this is all amazing things. So this is like, you know, we're in growing up, estrogen is kind of vilified, that, testosterone is the greatest thing. That's why males are these elite athletes, where it's like, okay, is that why? Or is it because females are also brought up in an environment that, think about it, growing up, males are normally pushed to go play sports first. They're going to do more active things, even housework. Son, go cut the grass. Daughter, go fold the laundry. Guess what? That is the type of stressor that's going to affect the development of that person. So normally we're going to see this discrepancy, really, because it's like that nurture versus nature debate. A lot of it actually comes down to how we're nurturing this growth of, are we treating females differently? And this is just kind of ingrained in our culture. And is that actually affecting why we're seeing females with much more injuries? Why we're seeing, such a discrepancy between the performance of male and female athletes. If we are responding to training exactly the same, okay, one, is there a discrepancy in how we're actually providing this training? And two, do females already have an under advantage because we're not being pushed to do physical things the same manner that males are? And that's something that we have to question and understand, that, man, that adolescent period is fundamental for physical growth, for mental growth, and how we are, telling these kids what to do is going to affect their physical makeup for the rest of their lives. And that's a really big conversation that I think is really important to have.
Absolutely. I mean, like, I think when I was at the gym a while ago, a very long time ago now, I remember chatting to a friend, I don't know what we're talking about, but he's very good at judo. And he was like, oh yeah, I grew up doing judo. Yeah, my brother did this. And, and lots of guys I've spoken to grew up doing football. And this may be a bit of a generalization, but I do feel like generally guys often are given, as you say, much more of an opportunity. Mm-hmm. So it's a really positive thing for them to do sport. My dad was very wanted me to do loads of sport because I was his only son, his only chance for a son. I didn't a lot of girls I grew up around just thought muscles were really unattractive, mm-hmm. and that it would really like be a problem. And none of them did. You could dance, but you couldn't do weights or do anything which would, they're allowed sports.
Up to this date, mm-hmm. We have people commenting about big shoulders, mm-hmm. as if it's a bad thing.
Yeah.
It's a manly thing.
Yeah.
And that like needs to.
God forbid you can like lift the bag or, you know. And also I find it quite interesting because sometimes, you know, like you get asked to lift, you know, or do you need help with your bag? And it's sort of like, whilst it's a really nice thing to be offered help, mm-hmm. it's the same thing you would talk about. It's like, if I don't lift this bag every day, uh-huh. I'm not going to be able to lift this bag at all.
Exactly.
Like it's sort of, yeah. And it's sort of like, but it sort of poses, it's like in culture, it's sort of posed as like, oh no, but you know, you need extra help. I can, it's easier for a guy to lift the thing, so they should mm-hmm. just lift the thing. Or, but I mean, I think it feels like what you're doing really is like smashing down those taboos, which are mm-hmm. so ingrained.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing how hard it is as well to change people's perception of it.
It really is. That comment you just made about, you know, big shoulders, that's conversations that we have every day with these athletes. You know, I have a parent tells me that her daughter is afraid of having big shoulders. And that's when we kind of sit down and being like, hey, Shan, guess what? Like, your shoulders are never going to be huge, because that's just one, you're a female, and we know that we do not accumulate muscle mass upper body the same as males. We know this. Two, you play a sport that involves an upper body, so let's get strong. There is this big misconception between what strength training is and what bodybuilding is. And bodybuilding is, you know, how do you win that sport? You have an enhanced body, right? So the whole goal is to accumulate as much muscle mass as possible. When you're an athlete, yes, having more muscle is great, but that muscle has to not only be there, but it has to learn how to produce force and produce force very fast in regards to power so that it's now going to carry over to your sport. So for athletes, you're not training them to be bodybuilders. That's not what's getting them the results that they need. You're doing this in a very potentiated manner in which you're building muscle. You're teaching that muscle how to be strong. You're then getting them, stimulating that muscle to learn how to produce that strength in a very fast manner. So that's going to carry over to faster sprints, harder hits, higher jumps. That's what it means to train an athlete. And I find that sometimes if you kind of, you know, pose it that way, you're able to kind of knock down those barriers. But another big thing is just, you know, sometimes athletes are the product of what the parents think. And I know for my mom grew up in a different world than I did. And I find many of these girls, their parents to come in and, well, I don't want her to have big legs. And I just look at them.
You literally
just said that in front of your daughter. Your daughter is a soccer player. Her performance is going to directly depend on her muscles' ability to produce force. So if we're focusing on trying to limit that, why is she playing sport? No, let's change the conversation. Let's think of, okay, I need my athlete to be this strong. Let's get her this strong. Let's get her squatting this weight because research says that, you know, she should be able to squat about 2 times body weight to have the highest carryover to what she's doing in her sport. And it makes me sad when I have parents have those types of conversations. Yeah. But I have found, you know, because we have a very unique relationship with these girls, it's, you know, it's great to have the conversations with the parents to get them to start thinking differently. But these girls are smart and independent. So our goal is to get their minds to change, because once their minds can change, the world can change. So, you know, we'll bring it up to the parent, but at the end of the day, I'm going to sit down with the daughter and I want to have her know, hey, like, that's the least of your concern right now. That is not what we are focusing on. We are creating you to be a better athlete. So let's focus on some performance goals that we want to reach. And your worth is not solely dependent on how your body looks. Yes, it's great to be confident in how you look, but it's amazing when you figure out what your body can do, how that carries over to that confidence. And that's the type of mindset shift that we're trying to create here.
It seems like the most difficult conversation is the one with parents rather than the younger. So you're working closely with young girls. Do you educate them on about their menstrual cycle too?
That's a huge topic. Still here in the States, we have many doctors that are still prescribing oral contraceptives to athletes that may not be receiving you know, a normal menstrual cycle. And
Same here. Same in the UK.
Okay. Which is, that is what baffles my mind. And another big reason why I love doing this, because, you know, I like to think that there is a big gap between research and application. Current research has demonstrated repeatedly that providing oral contraceptives, which is the first goal of giving that to young females, that that's going to help protect your bones, right? You're not receiving your period. Bone is only going to be accumulated really during this adolescent period up till about like 25. From there, the bone you have is the bone you have. So the whole idea, you know, good in theory, let's give her this exogenous hormone that has been shown to help build bone. And, you know, that's going to help. You know, I like to say that was the bandage. Well, one, the bandage really doesn't work because all of the results of those studies are so contraindicated in that you have some, yes, the bones are stronger. Others, the bones actually got weaker. And for me, as a physiologist, I think of, okay, if I'm giving my body an exogenous hormone, that's going to blunt my own production of that hormone. So I like to try to give an analogy in that, okay, if you have a, if your son is just not, you know, all he's on the football team and he is little and he's not growing at the same rate as his friends, are you going to give him testosterone? Probably not.
Yeah.
So then if your young female athlete is not getting a normal menstrual cycle, why are you going to give her estrogen? It's the same thing. It is the same thing. So let's stop trying to bandage the problem and let's understand what's the cause of this problem. And that's why there has been all this new research on REDS, so relative energy deficiency in sport. And a lot of times that we see this, you know, disrupted menstrual cycle or very delayed menstrual cycle. So let's say the athlete's 15 and still not menstruating. This is often related to her energy intake, and that if she's not consuming enough energy to meet, one, the demands that she's imposing on her body through sport, two, meeting the demands of just growth, because we know that adolescents have a higher energy need, your body starts to shut down different systems that it does not deem necessary for survival, which is one, why I find the human body is so amazing. Like, that is so cool to me. Yeah. But what is one of these systems? Your reproductive system, because put simply, hello, as a human, if you cannot consume enough energy to keep yourself alive, why does your body think it's ready to reproduce? It doesn't. Yeah. So that's why we stop allocating energy, because it's energetically expensive to menstruate, to ovulate. So that's really the cause here. So we need to start tackling the cause and not even talk about the oral contraceptive situation, because that's not even a little bit a part of it. Instead, we need to understand, you know, beyond like, you know, extreme outside diseases or conditions like PCOS, why is this young athlete not receiving a regular menstrual cycle? And research shows that more often than not, it comes down to inadequate energy. And it's huge, because that is going to relate to the athlete's ability to recover from injuries. Think about it. Like, every time you're, or just recover from sport. So you're telling me that you have an athlete that isn't regularly menstruating. She often has knee trouble, and then she tore her ACL, and you're like, oh my goodness, it must have been because she was in this phase of her menstrual cycle. No, it's because physiologically, your body breaks down every time you do something, and that it needs enough building blocks and energy to build back up. If you're not receiving that, if you're not receiving the even...
It's a red flag.
Exactly. It's a huge red flag. So perhaps that's why she tore her ACL, not because she's a female. These are just like conversations to me that just seem so obvious, but that's where it's baffling that there's just this gap, that there's this old mindset, and that this old mindset is continually to be perpetuated, and it needs to change.
Absolutely. Do you think as well, though, there's like... If you were to get REDS, if one of your athletes were to get REDS, do you think it's down, like, how much is it down to overtraining versus not eating the right amounts or necessarily eating the right food?
Right. That's a great question. And it's really a good question because, you know, from a physiological standpoint, there really is no such thing as overtraining, but there's a such thing as under recovering. The human body is capable of doing amazing things. That's actually... It's good for athletes to have high training loads, because when they do, that actually helps reduce the chance of injuries. But if they have high training loads and they're not meeting this high training with adequate recovery, sleep and nutrition, you know, those are the two paramount things to focus on, then you're going to have a lot of breakdown. Then you're going to have an athlete that may not be menstruating correctly. So yes, you're going to want to drop down the activity level, but you're really dropping down the activity level to give your body a fighting chance to get more energy to now meet your needs. So it's really a problem of under recovering than overworking.
That's really interesting. And so when you're looking at training loading, I just wanted to how do you judge, you know, sort of like, you know, some people have this idea that they need to train twice a day, every day, and God forbid that you have one day off, because then you'll actually be, you won't be putting everything in. You won't be really, you know, because, you know, when you love a sport, or when a sport is your life, you know, you really, if, you know, you've got to really like, you know, if you get paid for it, you're lucky. So you've got to really like show that it's like that you're really taking it seriously. But how do you judge that? I mean, you know, what actually is an appropriate training regime for someone who does it full time versus someone who's got like a full time job or a part time job? Because, you know, you beat yourself up if you can't train every day and you work full time. But really, you won't be able to do that because, well, you injury and like exhaustion and all of those sorts of things come into it.
So that's great, because at the end of the day, training load really has to be given at an individual level. Some people have a higher, you have different type of muscles, your ability to recover, your maybe you don't work, right? You can probably handle a lot more training even as at a professional level than somebody that's, hey, I have three kids and I barely sleep at night because all these kids are under the age of four. So it's really hard to give a blanket statement and saying this is too much, this is too little. It really comes down to the level of the individual. And this is where, you know, everyone has a scientist in them. This is where you have to put on your scientist hat and say, one, if I'm not taking a day off, when is my body actually able to improve? It's not, because that's the whole purpose of a day off, right? I always like to ask my athletes, because I have seen many athletes like that, and I say, you know, what's your goal with training? Okay, well, I run faster. That's great. That is awesome. So now every time we approach a specific training that we're doing, we have to remember that goal. So if you, in order to reach this goal, we have to keep pushing our bodies beyond a level that we're currently able to. And if we push it, and then give ourselves some back off time, now our body adapts and we're able to do more. But here's the thing. Doing high levels of training also imposes high levels of fatigue. If we don't manage that fatigue, and then the fatigue always remains high, our ability to perform or have high fitness levels reduces. So that means that you're training every day, but you're never training at a high enough threshold because you're too fatigued to actually invoke any type of change, right? You're never going past that limit. So now you're just training to train and you're just accumulating fatigue, but you're not stimulating your body enough to recover. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm like, it's just called junk volume, right? You're just doing stuff to do stuff. And that's where I always like to sit down with athletes and say, being an athlete isn't just about understanding how to work hard. It's having the discipline to know and listen to your body and know when it's time to back off, because that's what makes great athletes. Everyone can work hard, but it's the athlete that understands when it's time to work hard, when it's time to discipline themselves and back off. Those are the athletes that are going to succeed in the long run. And it really comes down to, am I able, like, even like, put it simply, I'm lifting weights, I'm back squatting, you know? Every Monday I'm doing a back squat and I'm going a little bit heavier. And then all of a sudden I start to see that by the next Monday, I can't hit the weight I hit last week, but that's all right. I'm still going to go. The week after that, I'm barely able to hit the week I hit the weight I hit last week. That's a sign that the athlete's fatigue is too high. And now their training is not going to be a high enough stimulus to tell her body to get stronger. So that means she has to back off. That means you not listen to it, right? If your body's saying, hey, I can't beat it, I can't even match it, that means your fatigue is too high. Let's cut down the intensity. Let's cut down the volume for a week. Let's just do a little bit and let your body recover. And I promise you, the week after that, you're going to be right back hitting heavier weights. And it really is that simple, but it comes down to discipline.
And how does recovery look like?
Yes. So in terms of recovery, kind of like I mentioned before, there's really two main ways to recover. One, sleep. 8 to 10 hours a night. Sleep is regenerative. Sleep is amazing. Sleep is not only when your tissues are able to regenerate, but that's when your mind is able to, reform memories. When we think about skill acquisition, that's when all of those like amazing connections are really formed. So we must be sleeping. Sleep is huge. And then second, nutrition, right? So it's easy to figure out how, if you're eating enough or not enough, if just like, let's say you're gonna step on the scale once a week. And every week you notice that your weight is starting to drop. That means, maybe that's your goal. That's great. So if that's your goal, you can't expect your body to now enhance its performance. That doesn't make sense in terms of the laws of energy, right? Like you're not giving your body enough energy, but that's okay. So if you start to notice that and your goal is to get stronger right now, we're not eating enough. It's pretty much that simple. And then on the other side of the spectrum, if you're like, okay, my weight keeps going up by like, a percent every week. Okay. We may be consuming a little too much energy than we need to right now. But that's a great problem to have if your goal is, like I'm performing super high training. I really am trying to get stronger. I really need to improve my sprint time. Whatever the goal is, it really comes down to: am I sleeping enough? Am I fueling my body enough? You just basically, if the goal is to improve your performance, you probably just want to maintain your weight. Right? Females fluctuate. We have menstrual cycles. Sometimes we carry more water, sometimes not. So I like to say, as long as you're within 2 to 5 pounds, you're good.
That makes so much sense. And what do you think of, like, if you are trying to cut weight as a female athlete, and because there seems to be right ways and wrong ways to do it. Because, obviously if you're trying to cut weight, then suddenly you can lose your period, which is obviously a really bad sign. Also energy, you might fall into reds, and you also just like the lack of the energy, like, is there a way that you can manage that? Or is it more for you about like saying, do we actually need to cut weight? Why are we doing that? And then trying how do you approach that?
I was going to say, it really comes down to the athlete's goal as well as where they are in terms of the seasonality of their sport. So if you're in a competition period, the time is to perform. That is not time to cut weight. If you're in the off season, right, you're furthest away from competing and you're like, hey, I think I'm carrying too much body fat and that's inhibiting my ability to perform. Okay, let's go through a very slow and dedicated decrease in your calories, because you remember how your body adapts. So if you cut calories too fast, your body understands what's happening and it adapts. So that means that, one, your body is probably going to limit the amount of energy it's expending. So I like to give a great example on that. If you ever, like, all of a sudden you have an athlete that's like, I cut carbs. And then all of a sudden that athlete is foggy brained, and they're just like, you look over and they're like hunched over or sitting all the time. Okay. That little stuff is decreasing their energy expenditure. So that's why she's like, I can't lose weight. I'm like, yeah, because you're not doing anything anymore. Like at the end of the day, it's a calories in, calories out equation. That's simple. So one for athletes, please keep carbs where they are at as long as possible. Carbs are directly related to your body's ability to perform because they, one, help replenish glycogen stores, which are going to be like the number one source of energy your body goes to when it's time to perform high energy, high powerful things. If you're cutting carbs out, you're not performing as high. And guess what? That means you're not going to actually burn as much calories as you could. Pretty counterintuitive. Yeah. So if the goal is to lose weight, slowly actually start to decrease fats a little bit, just because fats in terms of performance really aren't related. You have like a baseline amount of fat that you need to help keep, your hormone production high. So you never want to cut too much. So I like to say, maybe 1 to 2 servings. Cut that out for 3 weeks. See what your weight goes. Once it starts to stagnate, that means your body adapted.
Okay.
Cut 1 to 3 servings. Okay. And then, there's a time point to do that. So you only do that, let's say the max is 3 months. from there, you have to slowly add food back in. That's a big thing that people get confused off. They're like, I guess I have to eat like this forever to stay this skinny. I'm like, no, no, no. Remember, your metabolism has adjusted and now it's super, super slow. So, you know, your energy levels, you're just not feeling the way you normally do. Slowly reverse the process. And as you slowly reverse the process every 3 weeks, you're going to find that you get to a point that your weight, normally actually your weight will drop a little bit when you add more food because your metabolism's like, woo, yay. You have more energy. Exactly. I love that part. And then, yeah, you're probably not eating as much as you were in the beginning. Maybe you're eating about 1.5, 2 servings of fat less a day on average. And that's your new maintenance calorie. And that's great. So you slowly add. Once you get to a point, you're like, whoa, my weight is up average, right? Not day, not week. Our weights fluctuate. On average, my weight is up about 2 to 3 pounds higher than like the lowest it hit. Great. Yeah. Stop adding. That's your new weight. That's your new maintenance. A big thing people also forget, if you're eating more, you have more food in your system at once. So that didn't mean that you added 3 pounds. You probably have more food in your system altogether. So maybe added a pound and a half. That's great.
Yeah.
That's your new maintenance. Yeah. And then maintain there for a good amount of time to let your body recover. And now it's time for that hard training again. And now it's time to eventually compete.
Yeah. Right. And okay, that makes so much sense to me. I mean, I know that if I don't eat carbs, my mood just also absolutely nosedives. Like I'll suddenly get anxious and really like worried and furious.
Yeah.
But like it's just such a big thing. And then suddenly it's like, oh, I haven't had any carbs today because just haven't included them or like, you know, for whatever reason. But so what do you then think of the keto diet people sort of rave about, you know, being
especially really athletes.
Athletes sort of love it. So yeah.
I mean, it's crazy that athletes love it because it's so counterintuitive. No, your body doesn't turn into fat burning mode. Your physiology does not change. Your body will still always maintain glycogen stores within its muscle. Mm-hmm. If you actually look at the research, no, it is. There's a new study actually just came out showing that athletes, endurance athletes that went keto for long periods of time, overall, their performance decreased because you can't change your physiology. You don't turn on this fat burning switch. It doesn't work like that. Your body doesn't take fat and then turn it to sugar. No, it can turn fat into a type of energy source from which, you know, carbs go into too. But it's not going to take fat and then all of a sudden have this like big magical change of chemistry and be like, oh, now we're burning this, but your body doesn't know. No. It's really counterintuitive. You know, there is obviously a huge psychological effect. You might meet some people that are like, no, I know it. And guess what? If in their minds they think they feel better, I'm normally not going to fight it unless they're a youth athlete. And I'm like, no, no. If they're an adult and it's like, okay, you know, there is a power of the brain, but you're probably you're leaving a little bit of performance out on the table. And that's something you should be aware of. And that's your decision. You're an adult. But at the end of the day, athletes that perform any type of, you know, powerful, whether you're fighting, whether you play a field sport, your body needs carbohydrates to perform. Mm-hmm. By not giving your body enough carbohydrates, one, you will not recover well. So therefore, your subsequent training will never be as good. And guess what? Remember how we talked about if you're not training at a high enough level to stimulate your body to adapt, you're probably going to be maintaining the same type of performance forever because you're not giving your body the fuel that it needs to be able to push itself past that threshold to get it to stimulate that it needs to adapt and improve.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was thinking about the endurance side of things. Do you notice we recently published a study on our, well, we didn't publish it, we shared it of someone else's research about they did like a test to do with men's HIIT training and women's HIIT training and the differences in recovery. And to do with endurance as well. Do you see much difference between those sorts of elements between women and men athletes?
So I didn't see that study in particular, but I have done a lot of research in terms of the difference of recovery between males and females. And from an actual like umbrella statement, females actually are able to recover faster. Mm. And this could be related to physiology in that estrogen is an anti-inflammatory agent. So inflammation is good at first, right? It tells your body, hey, what's going on here? Things are going awry. And then estrogen helps you tell your body, hey, 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 calm down, calm down. Things are good. Let's heal. Let's heal.
Okay.
And a lot of times females are actually able to recover at a faster rate than males. And that's why a lot of times females may be able to handle a higher volume of training comparatively to males. Again, this is an absolute statement. Mm. Everything needs to be given at an individualized level. Mm. But this could also very much seems to indicate that it's related to estrogen. And because estrogen really allows, it not only helps your body recover, but it helps promote tissue recovery. It helps promote muscle growth. Recovery is this amazing thing. I mean, estrogen is this amazing thing. And it actually, because females have a higher amount of it, females are able to recover at a faster rate. And we have additional evidence of this because females that undergo, menopause that are now we have a severe drop in estrogen, we're not seeing the same type of recovery rates as prior to menopause.
Mm. Okay.
And so you need to train around that. You need to adapt your training around that, around the fact that you need more time to recover.
Yeah, honestly, yes, exactly. So it really is going to, again, come down to the individual level of that because so it really depends. So if you're feeling really run down, especially if you're in the middle of menopause, right? It's not before or after. After your body's going to adapt, it's not going to have the same capacity that it did prior. But that's also could be related to aging, right? We know this. But at the same time, the best part about being active throughout your entire life is that athletes have been shown that one, if you are active from a young age through that whole period, you're going to see less of an effect compared to people that are sedentary. So if you're sedentary and then you have a big drop in estrogen, your body's going to be like, holy crap, what is going on? Versus athletes that are super strong, that are always healthy, have this routine, you're going to see a less of an impact.
Yeah.
Comparatively.
Okay. So whilst you're menstruating, how much do you adjust the training schedule for your athletes around their cycle? Like, do you do it drastically or is it just very much like how they're feeling? Because some people are like, can't cope PMS week or cope that's, during their period or something.
That's a great question. And that's actually something that bothers me so much when you see some people say, let's hack your menstrual cycle. If you actually look at meta-analyses, there's little to no effect of your menstrual cycle on your ability to perform in terms of, the physiology. If you have a spike here of estrogen, a spike here, progesterone. So when people say you can train around your menstrual cycle, that is such BS. And that is so not but at the same time, what is important is that, meet the needs of the individual. If the individual is like, I feel like my head is going to explode today. We're probably not going to push you as much. But for me, I want to say, why are you experiencing such extreme menstrual symptoms?
Mm. Oh, perfect. And what would you do? So if these extreme symptoms are there, what are you doing?
Yeah, that's great. So one, in terms of just meeting the athlete where she is right now, let's back off a little bit, right? Let's not push her too much. See what she's able to. At the same time, exercise has been shown to help help reduce those types of symptoms that you're experiencing. Mm-hmm. So if she can push it, push it. Mm-hmm. She's not fragile. Her uterus isn't going to fall out. Keep going. And then at the same time, some preliminary studies show that actually extreme cramping, headaches and stuff could also be related to a type of imbalance between omega-3s and omega-6s. So make sure you're eating some fish, make sure you're varying what you're eating. If you find that like, oh my God, every period that I have, it's like, I hate everybody. My head is pounding. I have terrible backache. I have terrible cramps. If you're experiencing such extreme symptoms, I would turn to your diet a little bit. Go talk to your doctor about it. Be worried if he says, okay, let's just put you on to oral contraceptive.
That's exactly what we're worried about.
let's not do that. Let's not address the symptoms. Let's address the cause of the symptoms. Some preliminary studies have shown that discrepancy between an imbalance of omega-3s and omega-6s. So I like to keep things simple. So, hey, how many times a week do you eat like salmon or something? They're like, oh, I don't. Okay, can we start adding that in once a week and let's see how we feel? And then, you know, doing small things like that and see if we have any change, any impact. And if not, definitely consult your doctor because maybe you have cysts. Maybe, you know, there could be a medical problem, but at the same time, don't bandage the problem.
Absolutely.
Focus on the cause.
Sorry, is omega-3 and omega-6 the what's needed during the PMS week or the week that you're menstruating?
Oh, it's needed always. Your body isn't like, oh my goodness, this week we had more fish. Last week we didn't. So today we're going to have really high cramps. No. Like your body doesn't work like that. It's at the end of the day, everything's about averages, right? So always try to make sure you're having a good amount of fish, a good amount of, you know, healthy fats.
And so we don't boost like, on something one.
Exactly.
All right. Okay.
Exactly. Right. Do it always.
And what do you think of the idea? Because, I mean, I've read lots of, in my own journey and figuring out how my body works and stuff, some of the advice is that when you are before your period during PMS and your progesterone goes really high on like day 24, let's say 23, that's like a really good time to rest because your progesterone kind of saps your energy. Or again, is that just a very individual thing?
That's very individualized. That's like there, unfortunately, with a lot of these research, actually a really great meta-analysis came out by, oh my goodness, I wish I could think of her name. I'll send it to you when I find it. And it really showed that one, most of these studies that are telling you this stuff are so poorly performed that it's very difficult to actually get any specific conclusions from because it's like, a lot of these studies, are you hormonally testing like when there's a spike or are you just looking at the calendar? Because guess what? Not everybody has the same. Not everyone peaks at day 25. You know, everyone is different. Yeah. So if we're using studies that are based on this umbrella average, we got to throw those studies out. What the heck does that mean? You didn't actually test this athlete. Did she actually have a spike? Yeah. Or are we assuming that she did? Because that's huge. And that's really affecting the research. And then secondarily, it really comes down to the individual, right? If the individual feels like crap, whether on her menstrual cycle or off, is probably an indication that she's not going to get the goal of her training. She's not going to be able to push it beyond, you know, that threshold that we need her to actually adapt. So maybe that's a signal that you should take a rest day. Whether that's on your period or not, that's just learning how to listen to your body. That's male or female. Maybe it's related to your menstrual cycle. Maybe it's not, you know. So I think that it's important to kind of, you know, pull back and understand, it's awesome that we are females and that we have this immense capacity to reproduce and carry a child. But at the same time, we have, you know, lasted this many years for a reason. And it's not because someone back in the ancient periods figured out how to hack her menstrual cycle. We are strong people. We can push through anything. If you're feeling like crap, but you start doing your workout and all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm feeling good. Let's go. Listen to how you feel. Don't say, well, I read this thing, then it said that I should rest. No, if you feel good, go. and I think that's what's the most important part.
So it really feels like you've got to, on every individual needs to find how many times a week or how many sessions that they can push. And then when they get to a session where they're like, whoa, I cannot do anything. It's like, right, you've reached your like limit. And then it's like rest. And then it's about being able to sort of create a routine or a schedule where you know, like I can push 5 days a week and then I need 2 days of lying down. And then I'll be able to repeat the same intensity of a workout.
Repeat. If not higher.
If not higher,
right? Because at the end of the day, that's what we want. We want to get better. We want to constantly do more. That's the whole principle of overloading. And that each week, you know, week one, leave a little in the tank, you know? No, you can do more, but don't exhaust the fuels yet.
Yeah.
Week two, now you have a little bit more. Give a little, but still leave a little bit left.
Yeah.
Week three,
push
it, go all out. Week four, calm down. Do half of the amount of workload and intensity that you did last week. Let your body recover. Come back to the following week. Guess what? Now you can push it a little bit higher than you did on your previous programs week one, but still leave a little in the tank. That's the simplest way to go about it. You have to overload your body. You have to back off. Leave a little into your tank. Week three, push it. Week four, your body is super fatigued because you pushed it. Relax, let it recover. That doesn't mean do nothing. It just means cut the vine down. If your training is normally 2 hours, let's make it 1 hour and let's make it less intense. Let's have more rest periods between what you normally do. Do that for that week and then come back. And guess what? You're going to be doing so much better than you did the week before.
That makes a lot of sense to me. But like, I never would have thought of it like that, like just broken it down so well. And so when it comes to recovery, I mean, you sort of talked about when you were younger and you, you kept getting injured when you were doing the sport that you were doing. Do you see a higher injury rate with women at all? I mean, and so this strength training really does basically seem to sort of sort that out. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So a lot of research, you know, demonstrates, especially within the adolescent period, more females are getting injured at a much higher rate compared to males. So one, we know through research, that strength training is the superior modality to help reduce the chance of injuries. Because what is injury? It just means that I expose my body to too much force at one period of time or over time that it had the capacity to handle, and therefore it started to break down. This capacity is related to one, your body's just physiological ability to handle load, right? So that means, you know, a stronger muscle can handle more force upon it than a weaker muscle. And then two, it's also related to your ability to recover. So if repeatedly you're going, you know, you're not leaving a little in a tank, you keep pushing it, and you're going home at night and drinking and you're not sleeping well and you're not eating enough protein, carbs, fats, your body is going to get injured. And a lot of times with females, it's related to all of it. But most importantly, if you look at from an umbrella, you know, how many females are actually getting exposed to the one modality that we know helps improve your body's capacity to handle load, to handle force, and they're not receiving it. It's time that we start exposing them to it. And then again, looking at that nature versus nurture, even more comparatively over this course of this female's life, you know, she's always been doing less physical tasks. Not because her parents think she's weak, but it's just, this is cultural, right? I said, the same thing. Son, cut the grass. Daughter, empty the dishwasher, fold the wash. Yeah. Which is more physically expensive? Which is more going to cause a greater stress through their body to adapt? Cutting the grass. So it really comes down to that and exposing your body to a type of modality that's going to increase its capacity to handle force. And that's strength training.
Talking about injuries, when someone is injured, so do we completely rest? Do we do something, especially athletes in combat sports, they're burning to get back.
Yeah.
So what do you advise to speed up?
I actually normally do not recommend full rest because one, when you fully rest, your body loses its physical capacity to do things, right? Even more. So now a lot of times you see these athletes that take 3 weeks off, jump back into the same intensity of training they did prior, they get injured again. And that's because they detrain over that week. So first goal of when you're injured is to train around the injury to maintain your physical capacity. Let's maintain. We're not going to get better. Understand that. Swallow it. Maintain. Second, there is such thing as crossover effects. So let's say you injure your arm. But if you do everything with your other arm and everything keeps working, that's actually been shown that helps enhance the recovery of that injured limb. Whether that because you enhance blood flow there, if it's just because neuromuscularly your body thinks that it's because it's using its left, it has to use its right. We don't really know, but we know that it happens. Wow. And
you did not know that.
No, that's really interesting.
That's a cool thing, yeah. And then with that, there's a psychological effect of injury, right? So we know this. We know that psychologically, if you are feeling like you're defeated and you can't do anything, your rate of recovery will be severely stunted compared to the athlete that is psychologically in the gym still doing what she can to, you know, just maintain what she's been doing, trying to train around the injury. We have many limbs, you know, do what you can. And her ability to recover is also going to be enhanced because psychologically she's in a better mindset.
Yeah, absolutely. And Marina,
you go.
No, okay. I was just going to sort of talk about ask you to sort of, if what you're to comment on the idea that being strong, physically strong, and strength training translates so much to your mentality. So like if you're feeling physically weak, you just kind of can't take stuff on so much. And whereas if you're feeling strong and powerful and like stable in your body, you're sort of less ease, your mental state kind of reflects that.
Oh yeah. That's huge. And that's why I fell in love with the barbell, because I learned, I always like to say deep inside, I felt strong, but externally I didn't. Mm. And the moment that I found the barbell and I learned, oh my God, look what my body can do. That provided me with so much confidence knowing, you know, I always like to, my favorite saying is, you know, when things start to get heavy, don't ask for a lighter load, ask for a stronger back, because the stronger you are, the more you can take on and the more confident you know that. And that's why I love focusing on female athletes, because not only physically do I know they can handle it, but there's a mental switch that changes. You give an athlete a barbell, a female athlete a barbell, and she discovers that if she puts in the work, her body will get stronger. And that whole relationship between, you know, you put in effort, you get a result, is so life-changing. And it's such a mental effect of giving her confidence, knowing that anything in life that's hard, that barbell is heavy, but guess what? If you keep picking it up in 2 weeks, it's not that heavy. Same thing with life, right? Any you get something that knocks you down, pick yourself back up, because you know you can handle it. And guess what? The next time you get hit with it, it won't be that hard. It's the same thing. Being physically stronger carries over to so many mental aspects that's why I find it so important for females of today to get exposed to it.
Yeah. And talking about mental health, you're working with very, very, I want to say fragile, but in a good way, young girls that have not developed this shield, this confidence, if you want, and they are in a society that's bombarding them with the false image, you know, what they should look like, and these boxes that they need to tick. Are you really working with them on that perspective, and how do you do that?
That's a fantastic question, because it's so true. These girls that we work with are highly impressionable, right? They're experiencing stressors in their life that I never experienced. I didn't have social media to what they have today. I could not imagine. And the way that we address it is, one, kind of like I said, by getting these girls stronger, it has them change their mindset of what their body looks like to what their body can do. And when they focus on what their body can do, and that's their mindset, guess what? They turn around, they love the way their body looks. And then secondarily, by creating the atmosphere that we have here, it's very positive. We make all girl, they have to cheer each other on. The gym is never silent. I don't care if you met this girl or not. She is lifting a weight. You do the same thing. You know it's hard. You cheer her on. You encourage her. It's a very unique environment where I like to say it's their safe zone. And it's just positive. And I find that every female needs that in their life. That one point when they don't have their phones in here, like, shut that world off. Exactly. Be here. Show them that this type of world can exist. And it helps them to return to that world that they're a part of in a very different perspective. And so that's why I find atmosphere is even when we have new coaches and we're training them, I don't talk about the science yet. My first thing we focus on is the atmosphere and environment of Relentless, because that is key to everything else that we do.
Absolutely. I think that's so important, the sort of the relationship between your mind and your body. And especially, we talk about like women needing it for health reasons and for like, you know, being able to approach menopause and being able to sort of, you know, mentally be strong. But actually, like, just being able to deal with the aesthetic expectation that women are under. I mean, you know, like I said before, I had a friend who was scared of having muscles. So she refused to do any exercise. And it's like, that is a very debilitating thing. And so to be able to challenge that in the way that you are, and you're creating like a whole army of really strong young women who like have that incredibly positive relationship to their body. I mean, that's the kind of thing that you carry throughout your life. And it's so powerful. Exactly. It's so powerful.
And we wish this was you were around earlier.
Yeah, no, it's what you're doing is absolutely, we're very big fans.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I think.
All right, before, do you have any other questions?
No, I don't. I think Lovely. We've, unless there's anything that you...
Do you like to add anything to our, like, do you want to say anything to our audience who are mostly athletes mm-hmm. in combat sports?
Yeah, I would say, you know, my biggest thing is everyone needs a coach. So find yourself that is a coach that is qualified and understands science. And it's a lot easier to go about your training when you don't have to overthink it. I'm a coach. I have a coach. Every coach needs a coach. everybody needs somebody that, one, you can keep accountability to. Two, they can help you understand, hey, I get it. Like they can call you off the edge. They're like, hey, you've been working out like 12 days in a row and your performances aren't doing too hot. Take the day off. And I find that it's really helpful to have that, whether it be a specific coach, whether it be a training partner. Build yourself a community that is based in science and not in anecdote or, you know, whatever they think is right.
Lovely. And before we close, Emily Pappas, what are you fighting for?
I love this question. I think I'm just fighting for progress in everything I do, whether it be business. I always want the business to progress in every way possible. Me personally, I like to say I started this business at a very young age and seeing how it grew, I think I grew up with it and I'm just fighting for continued progress. I never want to be stagnant. I always want to be getting a little bit better every day, business-wise, physically, mentally. So I'm fighting for progress.
Oh, absolutely love that.
Thank you so much.
Thank
Emily.
You for your time, Emily.
We're thrilled of to course. Have you.
I love being here. Thank you so much. Thank
we will be following you. Your journey. Keep posting. <Yeah.
laughs> Thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning in. If you like what you're hearing, please subscribe and share. And check out other episodes which can be found on our website and the Apple Podcast app.